Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet.
Once again, Radio Sai.
Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam, where the time right now is 40 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time, on Thursday morning, October the 15th, 2015. And it's a bright sunny day here in the ashram with an expected high of 34 degrees Celsius later in the afternoon and overnight low of 21 degrees Celsius. Prashanti Nilayam is currently celebrating the Navaratri Festival 2015 as per the grammar of the Vedas in exactly the manner that Bhagwan Baba prescribed. A sacred and spiritual extravaganza is currently underway and the Veda Purusha Yagna starts tomorrow, that is on Friday, 16th of October, for a period of 7 days. It will culminate with the Purna Ahuti on the 22nd, which is next Thursday. You can already feel the heightened divine energy in the ashram, and by the time all these days of special prayers and offerings and chantings and such are done, Prashanti Nilayam will be reverberating with energy of the highest heavens. We hope you will join us as soon as possible to participate in this grand celebration. And just in case you are unable to make it, dear listeners, please don't lose heart. Just stay tuned to Radio Sai. Our Asia stream will offer you live coverage of all the highlights. Dear listeners, in India, Navaratri festival marks community and family worship of the feminine aspect of divinity, with pandals or huge tents set up everywhere to worship the goddess in all her glory and with much fanfare during the 9 days. The celebrations typically include worship, live music, dances, food, and sometimes even little craft bazaars. With Navaratri, we don't really need to announce that the goddess has arrived. She's everywhere in her divine splendor. While we place the goddess on a high pedestal during these 9 days of Navaratri, where does she go for the rest of the year? Do we relegate her to the back of our minds? Or even abuse her as she walks, talks and interacts with us in many forms all the time? Does the goddess not live within each of us? And by each of us, I mean every man and woman and child. India, the land that worships God as the feminine energy, is also, very sadly, amongst the world's unsafest places for the girl, child and women. Female infanticide continues to cause serious social imbalances, and the girl child is still malnourished. Dowry deaths, wage disparity, and brutal violation of women's dignity and rights are disturbing trends in our society, not only in India but around the world. Our beloved Bhagwan is truly our divine parent who blesses us with the love of a thousand mothers. Bhagwan is the best exemplar of the three Devis that we worship during Navaratri, as he represents the perfect balance of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati, or the active, the quiet and the witness. Today on Morning Glory, we celebrate the glory of motherhood through the story of Mrs. Bernice Mead, who has, through her dedication, faith and sacrifice raise the bar of what constitutes a mother's love. Coming up, a Learning with Love interview with Mrs. Bernice Mead of the USA. This will be followed by a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, and today I will play for you part one of this conversation with Dr. M. Sainath. Now, befitting the spirit of the season, let's start with a deep dose of learning from a mother like no other, Bernice Mead of the United States of America. Have a listen, please. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Learning with Love. Our guest today is Mrs. Bernice Mead of Tustin, California. Mrs. Bernice Mead has been coming to the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba since 1978, and she has been serving as the National Education Coordinator for USA, that is for the SSE program, for the past 22 years. She is currently in Prashanthi Nilayam, that is on August the 4th, 2015, when we are recording this interview, as she has just concluded her participation in the SSE International Conference that took place here for the past 3 days, from August 1 to 3. So Bernice is here with us to share her learning with love, all the lessons, some of the lessons at least, that she has picked at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And on that note, I'm happy to welcome her. Sai Ram, Bernice.
Sai Ram, and it's good to be here.
It's great to have you. Welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you.
You've been with Bhagwan for nearly 37 years, almost 4 decades. Yeah. And I bet you picked up so much of learning, so many life lessons that you can share with our listeners.
Well, I would say so, although I had, in the beginning, of course, I came from the Christian background, and I had a good foundation from that. And I was always, you know, a Sunday school teacher and what you might call religious. But then I came from being religious to very spiritual, and Swami put me on that path. And so I began to see things a little differently, and it was quite an eye-opener to go from fundamental Christianity to this wonderful awe of God is all there is. God is love, and there's only one religion, the religion of love. And what a beautiful thought and it's a truth. It was so wonderful to come to Swami and to hear these simple, you know, truths, basically. Love is all. God is love. God is omnipresent. You are God. And that alone was a very, a truth. And whoa, you mean I'm God? And yes, God is omnipresent. And so that means that you are God too. And that puts a different meaning on it when you begin to see that, you know, this life does have a purpose and a meaning, and that we are all God. And thank goodness our loving Lord Sri Satya Sai came in the nick of time to bring us back to who we are and to show us who we are and put us back on the path. And I'm very, very grateful to have been called and to be a part of this wonderful, it's a drama that's taking place on earth now. And so few people, you know, compared to what are there, 7 billion people on earth now, and how many of those people even heard the name of Sri Satya Sai. So I feel very honored and very grateful, and know that it's a big responsibility also.
And as you mentioned, the greatest lesson being that he taught us we are God. Each one of us is God.
Yes.
This is so empowering.
Yes, it is.
And it takes you to the next dimension, because traditional religion taught us to connect with God as though God was another entity.
Yes.
And we needed a medium to get in touch with him.
Yes.
Now he says, you're yourself God. You're God. Bernice is God. Mm-hmm. I'm God. Everybody's God.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sit with you? What did it do to your life once you came into the awareness?
Well, you know, it isn't something that just happened overnight. I mean, it's a process, and something that you're on the path, and you begin to see things a little differently, and the light gets a little brighter each time. But I also was very blessed to have had a lot of connection with Swami, to have talks with him, and for him to guide me personally. And I've been very, very blessed with that. And of course, when I became the National Education Coordinator and had, difficulty in my family and trauma in my family at that same time, I had Swami to call me home and to call me in and to explain to me that, you know, this is a big drama. You have a role to play, and this is your role to play. I wanted to sit back and not play that role because of this trauma that was in my family. I had a son that had been in an accident and was in a coma, and I wanted to be at his bedside. I didn't really feel like going out and training teachers and doing the work that I had just been assigned to.
In the Psi organization.
But 5 months into this, after I had just sat back and not done anything because I needed to do the training manual, teacher's training manual for SSC, and Swami guided me then, and he brought me in, and he talked to me, and very lovingly, you know, saying that this is a big drama. You're all actors in this drama. You all have your roles to play. This is the role that I have given you, and you must play it. He said, it's an important role. And he said that, and I am the director. So it was like, whoa, wait a minute. And then I began to think, well, I'm going to have to think differently now. I cannot sit at the bedside of my son and cry and try to take care of him and wonder why did this happen to me. This isn't my role. I was a mother. And he said to me, why are you so attached to this son? How many sons have you had? Do you remember any of them? So he was teaching me another really basic lesson of attachment. You know, why are you attached to this son? This is a role. This is a role we're all playing. So play your role. You've been now assigned to the National Education as a National Education Coordinator. Play your role. I had, you know, I've had training, basically. I've been a public school teacher for 30 years. And so I knew how to handle a classroom. I knew how to be a professional teacher. I knew the importance of being dharmic in the teaching. And so I knew that I had been trained by God to do the role that I had been assigned to do now. And so my thinking began to change. And my role, I began to see my role a little differently. And then I knew that I had to continue on, regardless of what was happening in my personal life. I had to continue on with the role that had been given to me as the National Education Coordinator, training teachers.
And how did you balance or prioritize? Because you were a mother with a son in the hospital, and then Swami told you that you have to perform your role as the coordinator in the education department of this organization. So how did you rejig? What was different now? When you felt that, okay, I'm just an actor doing my part, it's a drama.
Well, basically, we had a large home in Southern California, and my husband and I were, in the beginning, we were the ones that got everybody together, the Psi organization, the Psi devotees in Southern California as one family. We had about 3 centers, and nobody knew each other. They'd meet each other here in Prashanthi Nilayam. But at home, they didn't know each other. And because we had a nice big room upstairs in our home, we started having meetings for Southern California. And so my husband and I were like the mother and father of the Psi organization. We began to bring people together. And so we had many meetings in our home. And it was we were like what I call the ma and pa of the Psi organization in Southern California. Then that role came to an end when we retired as teachers and the children were married. And so I knew that we no longer really needed this large home. And so we've sold our house and got rid of so many attachments that we had in the house, which were things, just things. So when we detached from things, then I didn't have a lot of things, you know, even animals, dogs, cats, all those had to go too. So now then, we were just alone. We had a motor home, and all I had to do now was to think about the work that had been assigned. And that's how it all started. I was going to do the traveling and training teachers, and my husband sort of stayed back and visited where my son was to make sure that he was taken care of. But everything was in place, and the travels began. Basically, you know, life, it's almost a dream. And sometimes it can be a puzzle. you know, you have to stop and think about, well, who am I? And what is this really about? Was I born for a certain purpose? Why was I born? And who am I really? And so these are the things that you begin to sort out, I think, and when you realize that you also are an exemplar. And I felt that when we had the meetings in our home, that my husband and I were exemplars. We were showing how Sai devotees could open their home and invite people in, and it was their home too. So I think you expand. It's like expansion is my life. And you begin to think along those lines, I think, and you don't think so much of who you are or yourself, but in your service of what you're doing but also when you are helping others and doing things for others, you're helping yourself basically. Because you're growing and you are expanding. Expansion is our life. I think that the pain that we go through, you know, whatever the pain is, it could be physical pain. It could be mental pain. It could be psychological pain. It could be spiritual pain. It could be all emotion. It could be all of these. And I think when you have, like we did with Jay, all of a sudden, I can no longer communicate with him. And he was, you know, he was my first Bhavika's student. And,
how old was your son Jay when he met with this accident?
26.
And you sent him into a coma for how long?
20 years. 20 years. And, he just passed away this past March.
I'm so sorry.
So it was, you know, it was a long, but we had some phenomena with it. I met a doctor here in Prashanthi Nilayam, as a matter of fact, from Stanford University, and she wanted me to come to San Francisco and meet this Debbie because they were doing children's artwork. And she said, it's really important for you to come and see the artwork we're doing. Well, I wasn't able to go until, this was like 96, and I wasn't able to go until later that year, and in fact, even 97. And when I did go, I met Debbie, and I found out that she had other talents besides children's artwork. She had could communicate on another dimension, a level, and her husband had said that architects from the other side had helped build their houses. And it was strange to me because I wasn't used to that kind of thing. And then I asked her, because when I had been here, I had asked Swami, I said, Swami, does Jay have a mind? And he said, oh, yes, mind is all he has. Mind is everything. Mind is everywhere. He has no body. And so I said to Debbie, do you think you might be able to contact this mind? And she said, well, I don't know. She said, but we can try. And later that evening, we sat around, and we were very quiet, and we did some ohms. And she said, well, I feel Jay's presence here. And so then he began to tell me things that Debbie had never met Jay, so she didn't know anything about Jay. And so she began to tell me things, and I was, you know, I was kind of taken aback that, my goodness, what is this? Is this really Jay communicating with me on another level? Just exactly what is it? And since Jay said, I'm going to write you and Dad a letter, because he said, to help you understand that in this state that I am in, I'm working on another plane. And that I have been assigned working with children who have death experiences and they don't know where they are, and it's to help them to go to where they need to go. Well, it sounded good. You know, I said, okay, maybe that's the way it is. And so we began to get these wonderful letters and talking about, it was all really basic stuff about love and about this other plane, that who we are. You know, we're much more than these bodies. We're not just these bodies.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Bernice. When you were talking to Debbie, who was helping you to connect with Jay, this was happening in San Francisco?
San Francisco,
and
right.
And where was Jay at that time?
Jay was in Southern California. He was in a home in the neural care facility.
Okay. And totally in a state of coma.
Totally, totally.
For 20 years
he was not able to talk or walk or, I could communicate with him. He'd blink his eyes and, he squeezed my hand and, you know, he'd smile at me and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But so I was able to talk to Swami in 2008. Swami, did call me in at the education conference. And so I, was contemplating, I had just begun reading, not reading, but writing a book about these letters and wanting to. So I asked Swami, I said, Swami, you know, should I share these letters from Jay? And he said, yes, share. And he told me three times in that interview to share the letters. I felt that they, what was in the letters, whether it came from Jay or whatever, wherever it came from, it was all about truth, about what we are and what we need to be and to love one another. Basically, it's just truth.
And how many letters did you receive?
Well, we got our first letter in 97, and I'm not sure how many we throughout the, but I never asked Debbie to get in touch with him. I wanted it to be on a natural. Sometimes he would come by and give her a message, and sometimes it would be a year or two before we'd get anything again. And so anyway, I decided that maybe I could go ahead. So I went ahead and wrote the book, Letters from Jay, and to put the letters in there on the website also, Letters from Jay. It's just nice information, I think, and it's just about love and about who we really are and what we need to do, and it's very sweet. It's a very sweetness about it.
Must have churned your heart as a mother to see your child for 20 years in that state.
Yes, it wasn't easy. You know, I really wanted him to be well. I was always hoping that one day Swami would raise him from the dead, as so to speak. But that wasn't to be. As time, unfortunately, the medication that he had to take for seizures, it destroyed his blood platelets and the bone marrow, and the bone marrow could no longer produce the blood platelets. But it was his time, you know. He had done the work that he needed to do, I feel, and that he no longer needed to be in that body that was dysfunctional. And I think, you know, Swami said that we all have our roles to play. This is a big drama. And so I considered that was Jay's role. And at his service, the people that, you know, it had been 20 years since he'd been working as an actor and that type of thing, but all these people came because he had made such a big impression on all of them, and they still remembered him and loved him for who he was. And so I think that was Jay's role to play. And I just happened to be his mother. And it wasn't easy, but I was very fortunate to have been with him as he made his passing, and we were doing the Gayatri, and I was lucky to be with my husband also as he did his passing and doing the Gayatri. And it was just, you know, it was just what it was. It's just life. You know, we have to expect death because that's the way it is. And I dealt, you know, 2 years with my husband who was on hospice. I have to say that it wasn't easy. I can't say that any of it was really easy. But I felt Swami's presence, and I knew that Swami was helping me, and I knew that that I was being an example for others, because all of us go through that path. All of us at some time or other have these things to deal with. And so I think that maybe the Swami was using me as to show this is what you can do when you have to deal with these uncertainties of life and these things that no one wants to deal with. No one wants. You know, you don't want to lose your loved ones. I mean, it's attachments again, attachments. But I just have to thank Swami for helping me to get through all of it and to out of it to be more loving and kind. And I think that it sounds kind of blasé maybe to say that I think that I'm a better devotee now. I think that I can... I think I can have more love and empathy for others, and I've seen a lot of pain in so many people. I mean, it's just interesting to see. You know, it's interesting. You know, Poppy and Art from Australia. Art and Ron passed away the same day, and Jay and Poppy passed away the same day. And I don't know what connection we had there, but it's interesting that, you know, these Baba connections went to Baba the same day. There's some reason, I suppose, but maybe no reason at all, but it was just kind of coincidental that happened. But, you know, I see in all of us go through times of sorrow and pain and, you know, even our doubts about Swami. And even in the organization, I see ups and downs and people, you know, getting angry with each other and that type of thing. And we have to really begin to see God in everyone, to love each other and to know that this is life. Things happen. Death happens. Accidents happen. We lose our money. We lose our family connections. It could be all kinds of things, but we have to keep on keeping on and know that God is real, we are God, and that this is all just a play, His play, and just continue until the drama's over. And we probably will come back and do it all over again. But hopefully we're getting close. Hopefully that, I think Swami has come back to raise the level of awareness, and it's just like this program, this SSE program. He said it's a basis for restoring Dharma. That's a really important statement. And what, you know, it gives us all, we should sit back and think about that, the responsibility we have. Is this what we do for these children and for ourselves and for the parents? We're restoring Dharma. The golden age is coming. Getting ready for a premasai. And I think that, like Swami said, it's just a simple statement. This is the basis for restoring Dharma. So we have a really important job. And while we have this job, life goes on and things happen. But just to be happy. Swami told me some time ago, actually it was after Jay's accident. He said, all I want you to do for your sadhana is just to be happy. Wow. That means I don't have to meditate. That means I don't have to pray. It means I don't. No, not necessarily. But what a big statement. All I want you to do for your sadhana is just to be happy. And the last conversation I had with him in 2008, he hit me on the head and pulled my hair down over my eyes and said, be happy. So I told him, I said, oh, Swami, I still have bouts of depression. And he said, I know. So he said, when you feel like that, pray. Just simple word, one word, pray. And I think it's a message for all of us. And all of us at some time or other, we suffer from depression. We suffer from things that happen that we don't understand. And pray. Very simple.
I'm speechless, Bernice. So much. The state that you are in now must have required some serious closure for you to overcome the personal tragedies. And these were like stretched out your son's illness for 20 years of your life, your husband's passing on. How did you overcome, how did you bring about closure to your grief? A lot of people get drowned in the grief and they never come to the state. They can't even dream of being where you are, that you are so involved in your work, you are so upbeat, and you actually, from what I could see, you do practice be happy all the time. You're full of energy, you're committed to your mission, you're a woman with a mission, just keep moving and going on. What about all the pain in the heart?
Well, it's an illusion.
The pain or the happiness?
Well, all is an illusion. Basically, I do have grief. I have had a lot of tears. And I think that's normal, and that's okay. But I think you have to go beyond that. Okay, it's okay. You can grieve for a while. Then grieve. But you see, I grieved for 2 years with my husband's illness, taking care of him and seeing his body deteriorate. And so almost it was like a relief when he finally was able to leave that diseased body.
What was he ailing from?
COPD. Swami cured him of lung cancer here in 2003. But he had been a smoker most of his life. He quit when Swami cured him of lung cancer. But his lungs were already diseased, you know, with the emphysema. But he lived another 10 years. But it finally, you know, it finally was the thing that... So it was just, and the same thing with Jay. You know, to see Jay in that condition.
What sort of a motor accident was he involved in?
He was an actor and a stuntman at recreational parks in Southern California, a place called Knott's Berry Farm and Universal Studios. Mm-hmm. And they did, you know, mock shootouts and all that kind of stuff to make kids and people happy and sort of the bad side of them, I guess. He was supposedly up on a tall tower-like and shot down because he was one of the bad guys during that day, the part he was playing. he hit the pad, but he bounced off and hit his head, so he had a head injury. And head injuries, you know, are not... So he also, just seeing him throughout the years and going through pneumonias and going through seizures and seeing these things happen to the body, also that was kind of relief to know that finally he was able to be released from that body. And that isn't to say that I wasn't attached to both those bodies, because I was. That was my husband and that was my son. And I grieved for it. I knew that I would not see them any longer in this lifetime. But I also knew that I had to go on with the role that Swami had given me to play, and that I couldn't sit around and feel sorry for myself and cry. And I still have bouts of tears. You know, that just happens once in a while. But I also know I get joy being with others. There's a joy being here this weekend and being with others and seeing the light in these faces and seeing the happiness in others who are doing this type of work. And that makes me very happy to see people who are committed and willing to do this work and willing to get out and train teachers and teach children. And this is good. This is good work, and it's probably the best work that's going on right now, this education work, and in showing others that, you know, we've got to practice these values. We're all God. We have these five beautiful values inside us, and we've got to practice them, and that's what this whole education program is about. Whether it's EHV or SSE or whichever side, it's the same. It's to practice these human values so that our divinity will manifest. So it's a great job, and and we're all one. You know, we're all connected to that great source, and so we have to be, to love each other and to know that we've got to help each other get through this trauma that we've all gone through, and these karmas finally reach, go home. It's time to go home. We're all God.
Bernice, I can't let this moment pass when I have the opportunity to sit across from a woman of your wisdom and experience and not ask you this question. You said we're all God and we have to help each other. How do you see God in those, for example, who misuse the name of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for personal gains or for ulterior motives, and who play charades and clever tricks to exploit Sai devotees, because devotees are very vulnerable and they feel a need to miss Swami's physical presence. And
exactly.
Those who are cashing in on the vulnerability of Sai devotees by putting up charades and making, what can I say, financial gains and personal gains in his name. How do you help them? How do you love them? How do you see Swami in them?
Well, first of all, we have to love them. We have to see God in everyone. And I think we have to be very careful also to not be judgmental. You know, I think of Phyllis Crystal, when she was on this airliner, you may have read her book, and there are these terrible men, you know, had hand grenades in their hand. They're going to blow up the plane. And Phyllis said, she talked to Swami, because she had that connection with Swami. And Swami, you know, what can I do? And he said, send them love. Send them love. Swami, I can't send them love. They're going to blow up the plane. They want to kill all of us. How can I send them love? He said, send them love. And she says, I can't do it. You'll have to do it through me. And so he did. And they became very confused and, you know, couldn't shoot, had put their hand grenades down, and so everybody was saved through love. And I think those of us in the Sai organization right now, we've got to send them love. We've got to send them love. We've got to send their God too. So I think it's very important not to criticize, not to judge. They have their karmas. If whatever they're doing, if it's not right, listen, truth will prevail. Truth always prevails. Always, always. So I think those of us that are on this side and we know who Swami is, we've had our experiences with Swami, we love Swami, and I think we just have to be very, very careful to not be judgmental and to send love. Send love instead of stones and harsh words. And I think maybe Swami will hear us and help us through it. You know, Swami is the director of this whole drama. And whatever is happening on the dark side, the light side, is still Swami's drama. And I remember at one of my conversations with Swami, I was still in the classroom, and I had so many children who were hurting. They were coming from dysfunctional families. just, you know, drunkards, and I mean, just all kinds of things that aren't right in our society. So I was complaining to Swami. I said, Swami, what can we do? There's so many dysfunctional families. Swami listened to me very patiently, and then he said, but that's not all bad. It takes the darkness for the light to be seen. Maybe we have to go through that for the light to be seen. We, each one of us, have to look in ourselves and say, you know, what is my connection with Swami? What can I do about this? Nothing. Swami will do it. What we have to do is to love. That's the basic teachers that you know, Jesus was my first teacher, and that was the first lesson I learned, was to love ye one another. And it's not easy. There are times when it's not easy. It's not easy sometimes for a husband and a wife to love each other. It's not easy sometimes for parents to love their children. I mean, that close relationship. But I think that's the key to this whole universe is love. Each one of us, of course, has our own link with Swami. And that means we all do. Everyone has their link with Swami. And I think any time that we have any kind of, and I have talked with Swami, you know, many times during my husband's illness and during Jay's time, and even at the time of their departure, I was with both of them, and we were doing the Gayatri Mantra. And it was just a time to be close to Swami, to know that, hey, you know, this is a drama, and it's all beautiful. They're having their wonderful transitions because the family's here and we're doing the Gayatri. And I think with each one of us, we have to get into connection with who we really are. And that's God. That's that love. Basically, it's God and love are synonymous. It's the same. And hopefully, we will all get that lesson sooner or later. But the world is always, you know, the world has always been like this. It's always been like this. We've had far too many wars. We've had far too much hatred. And it's time that mankind began to see each other as brothers and sisters. We're all one big family. We're not the, it's a worldly thing. It's happening, but we've got to, that's why Swami came. That's why Swami came, to bring us back. He said, when Dharma declines, I have to reincarnate. I have to come back. And so he came back to save us again, to save us again.
I hear you, but the whole mission of the avatar, for 85 years, he gave of himself to teach us and to reestablish dharma. And how is it that this Pandora's box just opened up right after he left the body? By now we should have sorted ourselves, shouldn't we?
You know, it is a mystery. God has always been a mystery. It's very difficult to understand anything. You know, it was difficult for me to understand. Here I was selected the National Education Coordinator. Hey, I had a job to do. I was going to go train teachers, and everything was roses and beautiful. And then whammo, you know, a family disaster. Well, I think that's the way this thing happens. You see, Swami leaves his body, and whammo, we expect him to be here until he was 96. And then things begin to happen. But I have to think that everything is in divine order. I don't know what his reason is. I have no clue. But I do have the faith that everything is in divine order and that all will turn out just fine. And I do know that it is really necessary for each one of us to see God in each other.
Bernice Mead, I just don't have the words to thank you for sharing your wisdom, your challenges, how you overcame them, the learning along the way. It's such candor. Deeply appreciated. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. I'm glad that this is my role to play. It's a nice role.
Yes, as a teacher and an exemplar.
Yes.
Sai Ram, Bernice.
Sai Ram.
Well, dear listeners, Sai Ram, you just heard an episode of Learning with Love with Mrs. Bernice Mead of Tustin, California, USA. Hope you gathered some lessons from her learning. We look forward to your feedback to this interview by email at listener@radiosci.org. With that, let us now move on, as we have part one of a brand new Fleeting Moments interview lined up for you. Over now to my colleague Mr. Bishop Rushti in conversation with Dr. M. Sainath. Till we meet next Thursday on Morning Glory, please be well. keep seeking the goddess within and celebrate her glory through the thoughts we think, the words we speak, and the actions we perform. Jai Sai Ram, and enjoy the rest of the show, please.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. Today is September 19th, 2015, and the Ganesh Chaturthi celebrations is on in Prashanthi Nilayam. In fact, this afternoon, Sai Kulwant Hall will see a festival of creativity and sublimity, of joy and ecstasy, as the students march into the hall with their masterpieces of art and color, lofty and divine vehicles to carry their beloved Ganesha to their Lord, their dearest Swami, and seek his blessings before bidding farewell to the clay idols of their lovable deities. So it is actually one of its kind celebrations in Prashanthi Nilayam. Not only the Sai Kulwant Hall or the ashram, the entire Puttaparthi township will be agog and echoing with Ganapati Bappa Morya in just a few hours from now. This is the morning of September 19th. It's such a beautiful day, and in such an auspicious day, Bhagwan has sent to the studios today who's indeed a chosen one of the Lord. He not only had the opportunity to be a student in his university for 5 years and also had the chance to do his PhD here, he was also blessed to continue even after his PhD as a faculty member in the Prashanthi Nilayam campus of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And the reason why he is indeed a chosen one is right from the time he completed his post-graduation, Bhagwan granted him a privilege that only an exclusive few have been blessed with. Bhagwan bestowed on him the priceless chance of serving his physical frame since 1990 till almost 2003. He lived with Bhagwan as a personal servitor. And when Bhagwan, this was the time when Bhagwan was residing in a room in the Purnachandra Auditorium. The former students of the university listening to this probably would have guessed whom I am talking about. Yes, he is Dr. M. Sainath, a very familiar figure to most of the students and staff of Bhagwan's university. And for those who have joined the university a little later, here is a bit of introduction about him. Dr. Sainath was born in Hyderabad, but he did his schooling in various places in the country, in Calcutta, in Dhanbad, in Vijayawada, in Hyderabad. He joined the Prashanthi Nilayam campus in 1985 for his bachelor's in sciences. He went on to do his MSc, his master's in sciences, majoring in physics, which he completed in 1990. Later on, as I mentioned, as per Bhagwan's direction, he pursued his PhD for 5 years. And it was during this time that Bhagwan drew him very close and conferred on him the blessing of living with him and serving him at very close quarters. Even as he was serving the Lord, he continued to teach in the university as well as do his PhD, which he successfully completed in the year 1995. It is in this year, during the 70th birthday celebrations of Bhagwan, that he received his Doctor of Philosophy medal and certificate from the Chancellor's divine hands. And after this, Bhagwan gave him the opportunity to join the faculty of the Department of Physics in the Prashanthi Nilayam campus. He taught in the university, mentoring and guiding the students for 14 long years. And then in the year 2008, on Bhagwan's instructions, he moved to Hyderabad to be with his ailing father. In Hyderabad, he was a faculty member in various engineering colleges and later on took over as the controller of examinations in Rajiv Gandhi University, Hyderabad. He discharged his duties in this position for 2 years and then moved on to Mangalore in Karnataka to serve as director of campus in Bioris Group of Institutions. Now, since June 2015, he is back to Hyderabad, serving now as a professor in Rajiv Gandhi University. Dr. Sainath is someone whom Bhagwan called upon very often to speak on the dais, especially on major festival occasions like the Dasara celebrations or the summer courses in Indian culture and spirituality and so on. He was a master of ceremonies in Bhagwan's physical presence on a number of occasions in Prashanthi Nilayam. What many alumni of the university probably do not know is Dr. Sainath was also a member of the university brass band. And of course, whenever very distinguished guests came to Prashantinilayam, be it the president of the country, the prime minister of the nation, or any other such dignitaries, Bhagwan would ask Dr. Sainath to serve these eminent people. So in many ways, he has been a beautiful instrument in Bhagwan's hands, and even now continues to be in his own wonderful, mysterious ways. So thanking Bhagwan for making this possible today on this beautiful day, I welcome you, sir, to the studios of Radio Sai and to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
Thank you, and a very warm Sai Ram to every one of you who are listening to this. At the outset, I would like to place my sincere pranams and gratitude to Bhagwan for making it possible for me to visit Prashantinilayam. And I think it's a kind of good fortune blessed on me that, you know, I've been able to come to Prashantinilayam on the day when Ganesh Nimajjan procession is going to take place, because yes, it straight away brings forward some very personal moments which, mm-hmm, you know, we as a student had with Bhagwan the whole night, you know, the way we chariots were made, and you know how the artistic development and insight of the students was brought to the fore. And the way we used to come with in the procession and then go around Bhagwan, and Bhagwan used to direct us to go the immersion and come back fast. These are all very personal moments, you know, that add on to the already happy moments that one feels when we are coming back to Prashantinilayam. So I would like to really place my gratitude at Bhagwan's feet for making it possible for me to come at this time, and also thank Radio Sai, Bishu, for giving me this opportunity to interact. Yeah, I'm really happy that I'm here today.
Thank you so much, sir. Yes, as you mentioned, I think in every student's life, the Ganesha immersion ceremony will always surface and be evergreen because of the joy that it creates, the excitement.
Yeah, and undoubtedly, Gokulashtami, and then Vinayaka Chavati, then convocation, birthday, yes, sports meet. I think these are more than just mere red letter days in, yes, the mind of every student.
Yes.
It's because every student gets involved in some way or the other in, yes, these activities. It need, yes, not be as a direct participant. It can be even an indirect support,
yes,
participant.
Yes.
Like when I joined in 1985, you know, it was a 60th birthday going on.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a 60th birthday celebrations going on. You know, many of my senior students were so involved with the drama and then the music program. Then the brass band had just started that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, some were practicing in that and some were, they were all seemed to be involved in something or the other, that most of us who just joined, you know, we were being, feeling that we are left out.
You're actually trying to get a hang,
yeah,
of the system.
Some of us had already got the hang because, you know, it was 4 to 5 months since we had joined, you know,
yes,
and, but we felt left out, you know.
Now eager to participate,
yeah,
in something.
Everybody was involved in something, and, you know, Swami is some of the best devotees Swami had,
yes,
some very well-known figures, yes, like Anjali Devi and all were, yes, there, you know, they were guiding the students in the dramatics and all those things. So at that time, you know, we first year students, we came forward and we approached the warden and we said, sir, we would like to do something. So he smiled and he said, there's plenty of work for everybody in such an occasion. And,
yes,
you know, we did a simple task. I remember we started with a very simple task, and,
mm-hmm,
that was carrying milk,
mm-hmm,
in the night. You know, milk was served at 9:30 in the hostel, so we used to carry milk to those students who were preparing for the drama and, you know, music contest in the Shanti Vedika, which was constructed that year,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, in the institute and other places. So we used to carry in a can milk for them, serve it and bring it back. And I remember it as one of my most cherished and prized moment.
Wow.
Because it was like, in Telugu we have a saying called Urta Sahayam. It is a very small part that we played in a gigantic performance, but we were still very happy.
Very fulfilled that you
very
got
fulfilling.
To even this
moment. Yes. It was a very happy moment for us.
Yes.
And even 25 years after it happened, if I'm still remembering it
exactly,
so clearly,
yes,
I remember the person whom I served the milk to.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I still remember that. I still remember the person with whom I used to carry the milk with. It's, you can understand how much of a cherished moment,
yeah,
it was for us. Like this, I'm sure every student has, you know, memories. That is important. They are sweet and memorable for that person concerned.
Yes, yes. And these memories, I would say, are our eternal springs of joy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's what makes most of the students really not miss the absence of Bhagwan's physical presence. Because that is a special gift he has given to each one of us. Very sweet memories.
Yes.
Yes. So amazing. That I think that is a gift and a boon he has bestowed on us to help us cope much better with the lack of his physical presence around.
Absolutely. And I think the moment you step into the university, Bhagwan starts working. In fact, he has started working even before we were born. That is there. But still, you see how Bhagwan visibly and invisibly starts molding your personality the moment you step into the portals.
Here I would like to just, yes, you do have a very valid point there. In the sense that Swami's actual work on us, in each one of us,
yes,
as a devotee or one of his creations, whichever way you look at it, begins far ahead of what you and me can grasp.
Yes.
It's definitely far ahead of, you know, far removed from the time scale which we follow.
Absolutely.
But as a student, now student is, I would like to put it in inverted brackets, because possibly I'll try to explain later what Swami's concept of a student is. It's totally different in the sense that one thing I would like to stress here is Swami's physical work on us as a student begins the moment we step into his portals.
Yes.
So, but however, having said that, I would also like to highlight here that Swami's definition of a student is not what you and me think it is.
Yes.
So he has very clearly mentioned on a couple of occasions in public while speaking to students in Tri Brindavan, as well as speaking to us in private, that he definitely does not consider those of us who have joined the institute and wear white and white dress, sit in the portico for darshans and bhajans every day, and then take a degree and go. He says those do not automatically qualify as my students.
So who are his students?
Yeah, now that's a very valid question in the sense that with you, I'll be open and frank with you. This definition of who a student actually is was given to me almost 8 to 9 years after I joined Bhagwan's institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Because until then, even I meandered under the view, you know, that I am a student because I am in the institute.
Because I am a student of Sri Satisai Institute.
Exactly, exactly. I discovered later that not everybody who is a part of the Sri Satisai Institute is actually Bhagwan's student. Bhagwan's student is different. An institute student is different.
Different.
And this definition was given to me, I was faced with it 8 years almost after I joined Bhagwan's institution in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened in Tri Brindavan. I remember there was an elderly devotee of Bhagwan, one lady, a distinguished judge. She was there, and whose son happened to be an institute's student. And Swami was just relaxing, you know, Tri Brindavan atmosphere, however it is. And there Swami was just talking, and this lady was there. So Swami asked her, how are you doing? And the lady said, Swami, I'm very happy, and thank you for your grace, and I want to share a happy news with you. My son is going abroad for his higher studies. So Swami said, I'm happy. My blessings are there with him always. And then she said, Swami, he was your student. And Swami just smiled, and for the first time, you know, and he said, he was not my student.
Mm-hmm.
Then some of these older my seniors, who actually were his batchmates in the institute, they were kind of stunned. So they started looking at each other and saying, you know, what does Swami mean? This person was definitely our batchmate. He was there in the institute. What is Swami meaning by saying that this person was not my student? And then Swami said, see, you join the institute, you participate in the curriculum prescribed by the institute, you write the exams which are prescribed by the institute, and you are evaluated in those exams, and if you pass those exams after going through your curriculum and giving the correct required attendance and all those things, then the institute awards you a degree saying that this person has successfully completed the course in this institute from so and so to so and so. So that certificate which the institute gives you at the end of the curriculum, that is a proof that you are a student. It's a bona fide certificate in the sense that the institute is acknowledging that you are our student. He said, similarly, Swami said, you want to be acknowledged that you are my student, you have to follow my curriculum, you have to give attendance as required by me, you have to study the topics prescribed by me, you have to clear the exams given by me.
Oh,
then I will give you a certificate saying that this person was my student.
Wow.
Now, I remember there was a stunned silence. Which means many of us sitting in Tri Brindavan were not sure whether we were students of the institute and students of Swami or just students of the institute. So then one of the elders actually asked Swami, that, Swami, that means that a person can be your student without being a part of this institute. Swami said, absolutely.
Absolutely.
He said, absolutely.
Wow.
He said, absolutely. Then a question was asked to Swami, then what is the speciality of being a part of this Satsa institute if it is not to be called a Sai student? The Swami said, who said that students of Sai Institute, Sri Satya Sai Institute are not my students? They are given the opportunity which is unique in this world. They get the opportunity to have the physical proximity of Bhagavan, which nobody gets. So that is like a, well, if you put it in the English language, I do not exactly remember the Telugu words, but the meaning translates like this. It is something like a catalyst. Like X is there in the outside world, he is also on the progression towards being a Sai student. But Y, who is a part of Swami's institute, is having a catalyst of Swami's physical presence, his proximity. So that acts as a catalyst for him to accelerate his growth in spirituality.
And a student of the Sai University has greater chances and opportunities to become a Sai student.
Absolutely, this Swami himself said that. This Swami himself said that. He said, see, that boon is conferred only to a chosen few. So that boon is my gift to you. But if you choose to ignore it, you may be in the institute, but you are still not a Sai student.
What you do with the gift
exactly
is probably our gift to Swami.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. It's not a gift to Swami. It's an expression of
a gratitude
to Swami.
Absolutely.
It's an expression of
our gratitude to Swami.
It is, you can really count on the number of fingers people who become a part of the CSSSI University.
Absolutely.
You can count on the fingers. Thousands and thousands of students, millions of students all over the country, and maybe in decimal percentage of them, yes, they get this opportunity of being in Swami's institution. So, and yes, the discipline and the culture here, they further act as, you know, the kind of support you put up for tender stalks so that they can grow straight and strong.
Yes.
This institution's environment, the discipline and the curriculum, the lifestyle here itself, they act like that kind of support. So what more would a student want, you know, to actually develop into a perfect human being?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why Bhagwan always referred to this system of education and compared it to the ancient Gurukula system, because you have that kind of a conducive atmosphere,
yes,
for the blossoming of your personality,
yeah, yes,
to become a Sai student.
Yeah.
So let us go back 25 years, and if we can go down the memory lane and share with us how you became a student first of the university, and then later on how Swami worked on you to make you his student, or maybe that process is on all the time.
I frankly, yes, I have never considered that process is ever going to end.
Yes.
I do not know if you have read the book by Richard Bach called as One. In that, there is a very powerful statement which he has made, you know, which has always told me something about our relation to Bhagwan. He said, here is a simple test to know whether your mission on this earth is complete or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you are alive, it is not. Simple. So I think that as long as we are alive, we keep learning.
Yes.
We keep evolving and we keep developing. It's basically a single step process towards evolution that we keep executing as long as we are alive on this earth. So, yes, now coming back to the question of how I joined Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Swami blessed our family in the sense that even before I was born, both my parents were very familiar with Bhagwan, had come to Parthi several times for his darshan, and Swami occupied a very special place in our family and our prayers. But the thought of actually joining Puttaparthi never hit my father until I completed my 10th class. So at that time he tried admitting me in the 11th class here at the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School. By this time we have heard the statement, you know, that you just cannot come here unless Swami wills it. And that,
yes,
was very true in my case. The application was sent on time, but somehow it didn't reach them on time. So I could not make it in the 11th class. And 11th class was one place where I actually badly wanted to join Prashant Nilaya. So my father said, no problem, you complete your 12th standard and then, you know, we'll put you there for the undergraduation, and we were happy with that decision. But this 10th class to 11th class is a very transitory and a very critical phase in the life of every adolescent, and so was it in mine. For some reason, by the time I was completing my 12th standard, I was least bit interested in coming to Puttaparthi. And I just didn't want to come.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I said, don't question my devotion to Swami. I still admire him, I respect him, I pray to him, but I don't want to join Puttaparthi. I want to join engineering and I want to go ahead.
So you are more career focused?
I don't know. Maybe I was not interested in the courses and
not just
something,
the graduation.
Something. Yeah. I can't put my finger on it.
Mm.
But I was just not interested in coming. Mm. And it was getting very uncomfortable at the home because every dining session was turning out to be a battle between me and my father.
And your father actually named you, I mean your parents had named you Sainath.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but Swami was so much part of your family.
He was a part of a family. But, you know, father would say, why don't you want to go? I would say, don't ask me, I don't want to go. And it was getting very uncomfortable for my sisters and my mother, you know, because every get-together moment in the family was breaking into some kind of a battle between my dad and me. He wanting me to come here, me not wanting to come here. But this is the beauty. In the 11th standard, when I actually wanted to come, things were engineered in such a way that I never came. But in my 12th class, when I didn't want to come, things were engineered in such a way that I had no option but to come here. For example, you know, I had applied to BITS Pilani on the basis, that time BITS Pilani's admission was based purely on the PCM aggregate, and I had an astounding 90+% in PCM in my intermediate.
In your plus?
In my intermediate, plus two. So there was no question of me not getting at BITS Pilani. But somehow it happened that some strange quirk of fate and the DD which I had sent for the admission, it was misprinted or something was wrong in that. It was rejected, and because of that, I overshot the time for admission into BITS Pilani. My admission was cancelled.
Oh my goodness. For some reason, the money didn't reach
it
there.
Is most peculiar, because the bank said that our records show that the DD is correct. But for some reason, from BITS Pilani, the DD came back saying that the account payee number name is not matching.
Oh.
No explanation. No explanation whatsoever. So I just gave it up. Then MCET. MCET was introduced just a few years before our passing of
the entrance examination for all engineering.
Exactly.
Courses.
And I got such a terrible rank in that. Generally, parents expect the worst from their children. Even my dad was astonished at how I could produce such a stupendously bad rank.
Oh, you are actually such a good student.
Yeah. Even he was surprised. He said, I never knew that this fellow is capable of such a terrible performance. I had no answer. I said, I have no clue why I got such a bad rank. And all avenues were closed. So the only avenue open was Puttaparthi.
You had no option. Basically.
I had no option basically. I must admit very openly that I came into Puttaparthi because I had no other option. So
in life actually there is no option when it comes to God.
And this
we think
also,
we have options.
I had given up thinking, you know, whether I had got a seat or not. I was least bit bothered. And since dad was in railways, he was stationed at Guntakal at that time. So one of his members, he had just come to the station superintendent of Dharmavaram station. He was also a devotee of Swami. So he had come for darshan. And just on a glance, he knew that his boss's son had come to write the entrance exam. So on an impulse, he just went and checked the list. He found my name there. So he promptly made an STD call. There were no mobile phones in those days. So he made an STD call and he told, sir, your son has got an admission into this institution. And the list, it was already almost 9 days to 10 days after the list was announced.
Oh.
Now, yeah, you know, Vishu, you were also a student. You should know that if you do not, classes had commenced already. It is 1 week since the classes had already commenced.
So you didn't even bother to find out whether you joined here?
No.
Absolutely no interest.
No, I was not interested. Then when this person said, my father by this time knew that he had nailed me because I had no option, I was sitting at home. He said, pack your bags, I'm taking you to Puttaparthi right now. And even I have no explanation to this, but when I joined and I came here, when I met the warden, he said, why is it that you are coming 1 week after your classes are started already?
He said,
we do not give admission like that.
Yeah, it's very strict here.
Yeah. And then, but then he himself said, it is okay, you know, Swami has said that, you know, it's not a problem. Swami has told us to keep that seat for you.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll go to bhajans and I'll come back and you can join the hostel after that.
Oh my God.
I think perhaps I may be one of those rare cases, you know, who could still get into Swami's institutions almost a week after the classes started.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
It beats me that you actually didn't even bother to find out whether you were selected or not.
No. Well, people have peculiar mentalities. You know, I was one of those actually. So that's it. That's how I got into the university.
And Swami was waiting with his arms wide open, doors all open to just waiting for you to make that.
But it was almost 1.5 years after I joined the institute that he even talked to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we know how Bhagwan works.
Oh, yeah.
Very subtle and
he had his eye on me. But I remember, you know, in those days there were maybe 130, 140 students in the entire hostel put together, school and institute put together. There were around 200 at the most, and all of us used to fit in the upper portico.
Yes,
nobody would require to sit anywhere in the lower portico. And, well, you as a student would experience there's a mad rush from the gate, you know, the moment Darshan Swami is, students enter the bhajan, mandir, there's a mad rush, towards prime places.
Yes.
So we also used to run like that, but I was a different fellow.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why is everybody running, you know, in the danger of breaking their hand and leg?
Let me
sit in this corner. I'm having an excellent darshan when Swami is coming. The Krishna statue at the...
Yes.
Yes, I used to sit below that.
Oh,
I said, what a lovely darshan I'm having. You know, Swami is coming after he finishes his darshan and entering the upper portico. I used to be the only fellow sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami used to watch me like that. And, you know, I used to have a beautiful darshan. I said, see, what more do you want? I'm able to see Bhagwan. Bhagwan is able to see me. Why should I risk my life and limb, you know, to run like that and sit in the front? And then almost a week later, you know, the warden at that time, he came and asked me, are you the fellow who is sitting near the Krishna statue?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, sir. Then I said, why don't you come and sit in the portico? I said, sir, I'm having a fantastic darshan from that point. So I don't see any reason why I should run and, you know, risk my breaking a leg or a hand, you know, by running in the front and sitting. He said, see, Swami has been asking me since 2 days that one of the students is sitting alone near the Krishna statue and that he should join the regular group of students. So I gave a gulp. You know, because he didn't want to talk to me, but he definitely had his eye on me.
Absolutely. He had his eye on you all the time, but now it was so obvious.
Yeah.
Amazing. And I think, if I can ask you, you know, you always had this devotion for Bhagwan. Bhagwan was always a part of your life, a part of your family. But when was the time after you became a student that you actually developed that different kind of connection with Swami? You know, you started really loving Swami.
Well, this is the whole point. See, some people, you know, Swami gives a special experience. You know, they actually realize, you know, what is the kind of stupendous gift that is staring in front of them. And but if some of them, you know, they are already kind of prepared for that, in the sense that, you know, like they know who Bhagwan is. They do attend his bhajans, prayers. Every morning, you know, they get up, they see Swami's photo right in front of them. That's the first beautiful sight in the morning. I belong to this kind of a family. And if you actually ask me, when did I started developing that love for Swami, I really do not know. Because, you know, that it took me some week or two to realize, you know, that once I started getting into the groove of the system, like bhajans, darshan, and, you know, Swami spending time with the students. I will openly admit to you that Swami spending time with the students was one of the most important event that made me look at Swami and my relation with Swami in a totally different light.
Mm-hmm.
It was not that Swami was speaking to me. It was that beautiful impish smile on his face and, you know, that bubbling energy, you know, which you could see in his face, you know, when he spent time with the students. That started changing me. Then I started actually realizing, you know, that there is something very unique that I'm being a part of.
Hmm.
So maybe within 10 to 15 days when I saw Swami, you know, spending so much of time with the students and, you know, joking with them, you know, inquiring about their welfare and all these things. I would say somewhere around there, my impression or my relation with Swami started climbing into a different dimension altogether.
Because you saw faces of Swami which you had never before seen.
Yeah.
Never before probably imagined.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He was suddenly looking more human and at the same time more divine.
Yes.
I don't know whether I'm getting it in the right way, but yes. I think many students will understand what
really,
I'm trying
that's
to
how
tell.
You really fall in love
yeah.
with him.
He was getting more and more human, but yes. At the same time, more and more divine.
Why?
Students would understand, I think, yeah. what
because
I'm trying
you
to
you get a feeling that you can actually approach him, that you can,
yes.
you can actually be
yes.
with him.
He was not somebody, you know, who was meant to kept a mile away and
yes.
be seen
yes.
only in a photograph. And, you know,
yes.
from a distance.
Yes.
He was suddenly like
yes.
my own mother and father, yes. you know, who would come and stand right near me.
Yes.
Look at me. Give me an apple. And at the same time, talk things, you know, which only a God can talk.
Yes. So I think it is at this phase that you really want to go closer to Swami, isn't it? When you
yes.
when that intense sort of affection grows
yes.
In you for him, and that's when you want more opportunities to be with him,
yes.
more chances to be around him, do little things so that he'll be happy, get
yes.
the smile from his face.
And the first instance of that proof was, you know, when I actually started joining the group, which used to run madly to gain the prime places in the portico.
So that happened very soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Within 15-20 days of my joining, I also started running.
Yes. So when did you get your, I would say, the first opportunity to do something for Bhagwan or to go close to him, you know, being a part of any program or being a part of any celebration?
Okay. In the 60th birthday year, Swami wanted that Dasara Yajnam also had started.
Yes.
And Swami had started, you know, we were told by our seniors, you know, that Swami gives opportunities for speaking to some select group of students every year. And so it so happened that that year, the Vice-Chancellor, then the Vice-Chancellor, Professor Gokak, he was instructed by Bhagwan, you know, that students in the portico before the prayer should have talks on the series called Satya Dharma Shanti Prema series.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, one student...
In the institute,
foyer prayer sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a 10 to 12 minutes talk by a student, one day on Satya, second day on Dharma, third day on Shanti, then Prema, and then Ahimsa. So, since I had some kind of professed expertise in public speaking at that time, I offered to be a part of this, and I had already given two talks. And it so happened that during Dasara, about 10 days before Dasara, Swami wanted to talk to all those students who had given talks.
Mm-hmm.
There were 14 of us. And we had an interview. That interview is something I'll never forget, because it started at 4:05 and ended at 6:20.
Oh.
Yeah. Just 14 of us.
Wow.
And lots of things happened in that interview, and Swami told us how he expected us to speak and what he wants us to speak. And he said, what's the major difference between a talk which you should give as a Sai student and what the others people give a talk? There are some lessons he taught us in those.
Yeah, you remember any of them?
Yeah, but one of the first things he said was never speak anything, you know, which is negative. See, people already read about the negativity in the papers. They see it on the TV. They hear two people talk about it. See, what is the special you are doing if you are speaking about a problem? See, Swami's students should speak about the solution. They should give hope. See, when people listen to Swami's students, it should be like, you know, that Swami is spreading a message to them. They should take back something positive from your talk. Make them go back with some happiness. That is something which has stuck on to me for quite some time.
Any other tips you remember?
Of course, the way we stand and the way we speak. And he said, you'll be surprised, actually, some of those tips I even now carry forward, you know, to students when I train them in public speaking.
Yes.
One of the things is that some people have a habit of, you know, staring at one particular object or one particular person, you know, while speaking. The Swami said, never do that, because that person will get a heart attack. He was so practical. Then he said, you know, don't repeat, keep repeating things and all that. And would you believe it, he never liked us taking a piece of paper while we are speaking.
Yes.
He said, see, if you are taking a piece of paper, what you are speaking is not coming from your heart. And I must admit to you that some of the best talks which I was satisfied with came at the most extempore moment. Not for a moment, you know, where I was having adequate time to prepare. Those talks, I somehow used to feel they are some kind of an artificial effort from my side. But talks which I give extempore, I always found that I was most satisfied with those kind of talks.
Straight from the heart.
Straight from, more importantly, what you think you speak.
Yes.
That's important.
You speak about your convictions.
Exactly.
And they come from the depth
exactly.
of your heart.
Exactly. If you get time to sugarcoat it in language and other things, then you are not being yourself. So this is what Swami expects. He said, see, you should always speak, you know, being yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. Don't try to imitate somebody else when you speak. That's the third point he will tell us. These are three things I remember very clearly. See, when you talk, you should be yourself. Don't try to imitate somebody or, you know, be somebody else when you talk. Then he said, when you're yourself and when you talk, if your language may be very bad, your accent may be very poor, he said, but the impact is the maximum. And that is what matters.
Because it is coming from your heart.
Yes. He said, people sense that.
Yes.
Second thing, of course, what he said is, don't stare at one particular position and don't throw your hands and legs about, you know, in the air when you're talking. Mm-hmm. Be dignified and stand properly. And the first point he made was, yes.
Wow. And that is such a phenomenal guiding principle that we are here only to spread
yes.
positivity.
Yes, that's important.
We are here to spread hope
exactly.
and love.
Even dramas also when we put up, you know, Bhagwan always used to tell when the sports meet time and all that. Several times when I used to slip and, you know, make some mistake, forgetting this particular first point of Bhagwan, that is, you know, he never expected Swami's students to spread negativity. I slipped up on occasions but he was very loving because, you know, he recognizes when a person does it out of genuine error, when an error also is genuine and when the error is intentional and mollified. So he would take guard accordingly. So this 60th birthday when we were called, it so happened that then selections took place. Professor Saraf was there then they selected a few people and my name was not there in that.
Oh.
Three of us were not given opportunities in that. And it came as a very stunning blow for us.
Was it that there were seniors who got opportunity?
Various criterions, we wouldn't really know, you know, on what basis the selection was done. But our name were not there in there. There were three of us who were expecting, you know, that Bhagwan will give us a chance. So out of the 14, just three of us were not selected. The rest of them were selected. So we felt very bad. And, you know, we would sit in the darshan and, you know, then this yajnam was going on. Warden was kind enough to keep us sitting on the sidelines, you know, where we knew that Swami will come and talk. Every day Swami would come, take our letters, talk to us, but never once did he say, you know, I will tell the Vice Chancellor, you also speak. It was a lesson we were learning, basically. We were just not ready for the occasion.
You were sad, so he was trying to do... ensure that you are not very sad.
It's something like this. See, a child would ask for a chocolate, you know, but the mother will give only how much is required. Just because the child is crying, you know, the mother won't shower chocolates on the child because she knows that the chocolate is not good for the child. Swami was like that. He was trying to console us, but at the same time, he was not ready or prepared, you know, to correct the imbalance and say, okay, you also come and speak. Because the truth is, we were just not ready for that. The Swami didn't want to put an unfinished product in public, you know, to discharge a duty, which he knew would harm us more than anybody else.
Yes.
So, it didn't happen that way. So, I had to wait for one full year. Mm-hmm. In the next Dasara, I finally got a chance.
Wow.
So, that was the first occasion, you know, where I became a part of a major program, you know, as an individual. But at the same time, as a part of the university. I was there because I was Swami's student. I was there because Satsai Institute of Higher Learning had taken me in as a student. That's the reason I was standing there in public and was able to speak in Bhagwan's presence.
Amazing. And I think from then on, it was a string of chances of public speaking in the Divine Presence.
Public speaking, yes. After that, yes, he blessed me with quite a few opportunities to talk.
In fact, just yesterday, I was reading a discourse that Bhagwan had given on Ganesh Chaturthi, and in that Bhagwan is referring to the talk you gave before his discourse.
Oh.
This is Ganesh Chaturthi 1998.
Okay. I gave what he gave through me.
I just remembered because just yesterday I was reading that discourse, and where Bhagwan says, see, Sainath spoke just now, and he mentioned the story of one student whom I told him not to go. And, you know, he did not obey my orders and he left, and, you know, then he had some problems, and this is what happens when you don't actually...
In Nigeria? Was it at Nigeria?
Swami doesn't mention the name or the place, but he refers to that incident where you quoted. It's very important for us to listen to Bhagwan and obey his direction scrupulously.
Yeah.
And I think there are so many occasions like this, right? beautiful interactions and lessons
yes.
From this opportunity that Bhagwan gave to speak in his yeah. physical presence.
True.
But before we go into that, can I ask you, was it also during this time that you became part of the university brass band? Because
brass
you said
band,
the brass band also
was,
started in...
Yeah, it started in 1960. Actually, frankly, I was not very interested in being a part of the brass band. And... But I was seeing, you know, that the brass band was getting more and more opportunities with Bhagwan. So I said, why not I make an attempt?
Yes.
And so somewhere in my third year, I started sitting in the front and trying to make efforts, you know, that I would like to be a part of the brass band. That also took some time for Swami. There was various reasons because, you know, those of us who were sitting, you know, some of us were not seriously interested. We were just there, you know, because we wanted to sit in the front and ask Swami. Some of us were serious. So he had to filter out those people without hurting anyone.
Mm.
So he managed it somehow and finally one day when perhaps the people whom he actually wanted to join were alone sitting there, he came and asked, why are you sitting? It was, I think, almost 25 to 30 days, you know, some of us had dropped out, you know, thinking, no, yeah, it's not going to work out. And some of us are persisting. So maybe the correct required number when it was sitting there, Swami responded and he said, why are you sitting here every day? He said, Swami, you want to be in the brass band. He said, yeah, go and join. Who is stopping you? It's so simple.
Mm.
So then I went, yeah, I played the trombone.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Kushal Mukherjee was my teacher, whom Swami selected.
Mm.
He used to play the trombone initially. So he trained me on the trombone. And initially, I used to be horrible at that, so much so that when I was practicing on the terrace, the then registrar, Mr. Chakravarti, his house was next to the hostel.
Yeah, in those
and
days.
I used to face that side and I used to play. So after a few days, he came and he asked, you know, who is making that awful sounds every day in the evening? So I had to run and hide because, you know, I didn't want to tell him it was me. So I was practicing the trombone and another person was squeaking on the trumpet. Both of us were learning. So, but from there, we picked up slowly yes. and you know but when yes. the time came we were very much there ready.
Wow.
We were not expert musicians but yes. yes we were adequate.
As part of the team you could be a member of the team and produce something which is symphony.
Yeah, yeah it was symphony. I was not very good.
Yeah.
There were some brilliant trumpet players and saxophone players. I definitely didn't belong to that league. Shailesh also used to give us the notes, you know, for...
Yes.
We didn't have those musical notes.
Yes.
We had to write, you know, Shailesh would tune it and he would say A, B flat, C.
Yes.
And we used to write it down in a diary. And then we used to play. I wouldn't even remember those, you know, I required a diary in my left hand. Some of my old photographs in the band, if you see, you know, you will see a small diary on my left hand, which moves the slide. And you know, my eye focus would go up and down, because slide keeps moving back and forth. So that expressions, luckily there were no videos in those days, you know, much, you know, but otherwise, somebody like Arvind would have easily caught, Sai Prakash and Arvind would have easily caught those flickering emotions and Swami had a field day making fun of me, you know.
Oh,
oh God. Because he would watch those expressions and you know, sometimes his eyebrows would go up and down, you know, depending on my expressions. And he would have a field day, you know, he says, how do you manage to read? Is it necessary to make such expressions? And yeah, we had a very funny time in the band, basically.
Yeah. Whatever it is, lovely memories.
Absolutely. No, I would never forget those.
So how many years you were part of the brass band?
Till I joined my PhD for 4 years. After that, okay. Swami said, you know, give opportunities to the younger students. Yes. But I think because Swami was already planning something else for me at that
yes.
time.
Yes.
So he said, Sai Giridhar sir remained in the band, even though he was, Swami said, when you're doing a PhD, give chances to younger students. So, but he remained, but for some reason, Swami didn't want me to continue.
Mm.
But like I said, it's okay. He was having already some plans, other plans for
yes.
me by that time.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So, you must have had plenty of opportunities also to present as a member of the brass band.
It was not, it was not like what you see nowadays.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
not like that. Like the brass band would pay only for Guru Purnima and the birthday. Not even Guru Purnima, sorry. It was play only for the birthday celebrations and the inter-campus sports meet.
Okay.
It would not play for anything else. The band wouldn't play for anything else. Individuals in the band, on the other hand, were called upon to accompany established musicians
yes.
like Maynard Ferguson would come
yes.
and when they would come, you know, like a trumpet was required yes. or a saxophone was required or the clarinet section was required. Individually,
yes.
they would be called.
Yes.
But the band as a whole played only during the birthday and during the sports meet. Never otherwise.
Of course, the later years,
yeah.
they have been playing on so many
yes,
occasions.
Yes.
yes. But I think the one activity in which you were always part of was this opportunities of speaking in the Divine Presence in very major festival occasions, with Dasara, summer courses and all. So maybe you can share with us more anecdotes and the lessons of life that Bhagwan taught you every time he made you stand in front of the stage.
Yeah, one of the best lessons I learned, which I'll never forget. Of course, it came quite late in my life with Bhagwan, but I never forgot that. You remember some time back I was telling you that some of the best performances when you are yourself.
Yes.
You know, extempore. There was a time when 1998 or so, I'm not very sure, when, you know, there was a series of talks which every day Bhagwan would give a discourse.
1996.
96.
Yes.
Every day Bhagwan would give a discourse.
The whole went from July, August, September.
Exactly. Exactly. For 2.5 to 3 months.
Yes.
And one day when I came back, of course, he was hinting to us inside, you know, that he is planning to start something like that. But like, you know, Bhagwan, you know, everything comes abruptly. So one day I returned from the college, and when I came, you know, Shauri uncle opened the door and he said, Swami is waiting for you. And Swami was just up and down. He was not sitting. He was walking up and down.
Mm-hmm.
The moment I said, he came, I think it is time, you know, that every day people are not, they're losing their grasp, you know, on why they are here at Prashanthinilayam, how they should make the best use of their time at Prashanthinilayam. I have decided, you know, that every day I would must talk to them about this. I said, Swami, that's a great opportunity. Then he said, somebody needs to talk before me. You know, what to do? I've asked G.V. Subbarao. Just look at the beautiful way he engineers the whole thing, you know. In retrospect, you actually think, you know, how wonderfully he has put you in the spot.
Hmm.
So he said, who do you think can speak before me? Who am I to suggest to him who has to speak before him? So these are traps, you know, you have to watch out.
Yes.
So I just kept quiet and smiled at him. He said, why are you smiling? You tell. I said, I don't know, Swami. There are so many good speakers there, devotees are there. They can all speak. So Swami said, I asked G.V. Subbarao. He said his throat is bad. He can't speak today. Now these are all, you know, like, you don't know whether to laugh, you know, or just, but you have to maintain a straight face in front of him.
Yes.
You can't start laughing. So I knew that what he is telling is not the actual truth what he was telling.
Yes.
And he said, G.V. Subbarao's throat is not good. He said he can't speak today. Narendranath, I tried sending word for him. I'm not able to find him. Swami is not able to find Narendranath Reddy.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. And then he was already near the door, ready to go out for darshan.
Hmm.
Just about he stepped out and he said, you do one thing, you come and speak. And he just walked out for darshan. No, you can't even tell him, Swami, I'm not ready. He had already stepped out. What to speak? Swami, I'm not ready. Nothing. He just stepped out and walked off. And Swami said, and general procedure was the moment Swami goes out, you know, he just goes, you know that. Music starts, Swami goes around for darshan and then he sits and Vedam starts immediately.
Yeah.
And
there's no opportunity to interact with him.
No. And most importantly, I had just returned from college. I had not even washed my face, nothing. I had no idea what I was going to speak about. And importantly, I had just 6 to 7 minutes before I could rush and be present in the auditorium there. How am I going to manage all this? And then began the drama. And Sandeepan Chatterjee was comparing at that time, because the thing is, if I am speaking, he compares. If he is speaking, I compare.
Yes.
So Sandeepan Chatterjee was sitting there and Swami came there. He said, Swami, who is speaking today? Swami looked at him and said, if Sainath comes, he will speak.
Oh my God.
Sandeepan immediately had that intercom and he called from then. He said, Swami is telling, if you are coming, I have to speak. Are you coming? What is happening? I said, I have no idea. Don't ask me. I am already rushing forward. Then I just shot out of the door. I just had a quick wash. Shot out of the door, went through the gardens, jumped towards the old stores in front of South Prashanti.
Yes.
And Sevadan started running after me.
Because oh my God.
They thought some crack is running across the, then they started. I had no clue people were chasing me. I ran all along the South Prashanti, went into the mandir. There, the Saha and Reddy were standing there. They said, Swami is waiting. By the time I went, announcement was already starting. Swami had asked somebody to speak. Sandeepan is already announcing. I don't know what to do. Because what is happening, that Swami told me to speak and I had a rush. By the time I came back, you know, I reached the mandir. Somebody asked me there, is everything okay with you? I said, no, I'm in a hurry. Said, look behind you. There were 4 Sevadal running behind me. And you know, I said, you talk to them, I'm in a hurry. Then I came. Just I entered the upper portico, my name was announced. And Swami looked at me and gave a beautiful smile, you know. I said, good, you managed it. I was panting, I was sweating, and then I got on the portico. Then you would not believe it, what happened to me when I got in front of the mic. Until I reached the portico, I was scared stiff. What was I going to talk about? I took Swami's Pad Namaskar. Swami just gave a beautiful smile, you know, saying, "You managed to come." Ochave, he said. And then he just blessed me. Baga matladu. I went in front of the mic. I just don't know what took over me. Where I was scared that I would not be able to talk even for 5 minutes, I spoke the full length of 10 to 15 minutes. Without faltering. The thoughts were just flowing through me. Don't ask me how the process took place. It has happened several times. I have no explanation for it. The thoughts just moved through me, I structured themselves, and I was delivering a flawless talk. That is when I really understood what Swami told me in 1985. When you are yourself, what you speak from the heart, what you feel in the heart, comes out through your mouth. That is the first time I have experienced that.
And then it is always...
Yeah, I have never lost that lesson. I have never lost that lesson.
Wow. No, the very fact that he said, okay, you have come. And he was so beautifully orchestrating the whole drama.
That smile. Made the difference. Yes. But...
I think with that smile, all your tiredness, all your tension, everything would have disappeared.
Everything vanished. And most importantly, the matter what I actually have to speak. You just asked me sometime back. You had no idea what to speak. I didn't have time to ask for me.
You didn't have time to take even breathe.
No, but the Swami was inside me.
Yes.
He told me what I had to speak.
He said, Baga Matadu. He already blessed you.
Yes.
It is already done.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Krishna, Krishna, kaun sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, to se preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo. Krishna, kaun sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, to se preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo, Krishna, kaun sang jodo. पर मैं भय पतिया तुम भय सरोवर मैं भय मछिया तुम भय गिरीवर मैं भय चारा तुम भय चंदा मैं भय चकोरा जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं ना ही तोड़ू रे तो से प्रीत तोड़ी कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू हम भय धारा तुम भय सोना हम भय सुहागा भाई मीरा के प्रभु जी ब्रिज के वासी सुनो हे गोपाल सुनो हे कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू
मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर 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 मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु ब्रिज के वासी गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु
giridhar giridhar giridhar.